Hey, everyone. I'm Adrian Wojnarowski. Welcome back to another episode of the Vertical Podcast with Woj. In studio with me this week to talk about the NCAA tournament, the pro prospects in the tournament, and the impact that March has on the NBA draft, Jonathan Givony of Draft Express and the Vertical. Stay with us. Hey, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Vertical Podcast with Woj. Here in our Yahoo studios on West 43rd Street in Manhattan with Jonathan Givony of DraftExpress.com and The Vertical. Jonathan, how are you, man?
Doing great, Woj. Thanks for having me. How about you?
I'm great. I'm looking at an empty NCAA tournament bracket, just waiting for you to tell me where to fill in the team names. Now, we're going to get into this tournament from a NBA draft perspective, players, teams, lottery picks, guys who, you know, may use March to help, you know, get them down the road here toward June. But ultimately, people just want to know, who should I pick in my bracket? Now, everybody fancies themselves a college basketball expert this time of year, when most people really just started watching maybe the conference tournaments. You, on the other hand, have been traveling the country, the continent, watching college games since the preseason. You've seen a lot of these players play since high school, and certainly you spend time overseas in Europe seeing some of these guys before they even come to college basketball. So I'm not sure many have seen, and up close and maybe with your discerning eye, have seen more college basketball and have a sense of styles of play and systems and coaches and maybe how certain players may react to this stage. So I'll start here. First round, opening round on Thursday, Friday, who scares you? What high-seeded team do you say, if I'm going to pick an upset or two, where are you starting, Jonathan?
Well, the first one that popped out to me was Florida State, Florida Gulf Coast in Orlando. I wonder what that arena is going to look like. I know Florida is also playing in that same pod, and I can imagine a scenario where Gator fans come out in full force and just, you know, pour it on.
Now, this is coming from a Gator alum, too.
This is true.
I hadn't even thought of that. You're a Florida guy picking against Florida State. But listen, your professionalism is second to none. I know you believe this.
No, this is a fun time of year, and honestly, I often try to apply too much logic to these bracket picks when we know that a lot of what this comes down to is, you know, 19-year-old kids being put, you know, in empty gyms, very foreign environments that they've never encountered before, playing at strange times of the day, and, you know, just getting through that first game is really everything. So a lot of it is going to come down to nerves and, you know, just surviving, because we're going to see a lot of upsets, I think. There's going to be some double-digit seeds that, you know, make it to the Sweet 16. For example, I like Nevada. Iowa State has been very hot. Monte Morris is a big-time point guard. He's a senior. But I could see, you know, those guys are tough. Musselman.
Eric Musselman, pro background, coached two teams in the NBA.
Yeah, they have a good point guard themselves, and they have their own pro prospect in Cam Oliver, who wants to declare for the draft, needs to have a very strong showing, you know, played in the Mountain West Conference where, you know, which was very down this year, didn't have a lot of opportunities to show scouts that he can bring it in big-time matchups, and often kind of fell flat on his face when he did have the chance to. For example, in the championship game in the Mountain West, really didn't show up. So I like Nevada over Iowa State. And then setting up against, you know, Purdue, that's going to be a very interesting matchup too. Another one that I like is Bucknell over West Virginia.
In Buffalo.
Yeah, I just think that you know, they're going to be able to handle the press. I like Xavier over Maryland. Xavier is an 11 seed. Maryland's a 6. So it wouldn't be the craziest upset ever.
Another 6-11, URI and Creighton. Two Big East teams at 11 who've had injuries, both lost their point guards.
Yes.
To me, if you look at teams who might be a little susceptible, I agree with you on both Xavier and Creighton.
Yeah, so it's going to be a fun weekend. Last year, I decided to go out to Providence. Duke was there. Miami was there. Baylor was there. So it was a great little excursion out to Providence. And then we also had a pod here in Brooklyn, which was amazing. This year, I'm going to sit on my couch the first weekend, watch as much as possible, just really kind of soak it in. And I feel like for us, our work is pretty much done at this point. I mean, we've been out. We've seen everybody in person multiple times. We've watched. We studied the film. And we're going to dig in more on Synergy, full games. Once the season is over, we get to, things kind of put a little bit more perspective on the season. But we have a pod out here in New York for the Sweet 16 Elite Eight. That'll be great, potentially, Duke, Villanova. I actually like SMU in that East bracket in New York. I could see some upsets happening there too.
You look at factors that impact how players handle March, what players are locked in, what players, might have their own agenda over that of a team. And I think what people don't realize is there's so many players right now who are going to declare for the draft, whose family or coaches or whomever are sifting through the agent process because that's ongoing. What agent am I going to sign with? Are we having meeting? Like, there are agent meetings going on all the time with, typically it's players' family, not as much players this time of year. But there are just, players are hearing from people around them or they look at mock drafts and go, hey, I'm not in the first round right now, or I'm not as high as I want to be, or agents who might know they're going to sign a player have polled teams and asked them, where does this guy fit? And so what is hard to measure is what's going on in an 18-year-old, a 19-year-old, a 20-year-old kid's mind about what do I need to do on Thursday or Saturday or Friday or Sunday that is going to help me with the jump I'm about to make, or other guys who are borderline who'd like to come out but they haven't, especially the freshman, maybe, or sophomore who hasn't played a ton, but it has big upside, or he's a 7-foot or whatever. Like, there are lots of dueling agendas that do impact teams. And sometimes the coaches don't even know, a lot of times this is going on, beyond the reach of the head coach. And oftentimes we know this, college coaches are they're complicit in with the agent process because they use the agent to help get the player to their school.
Right.
So there's a lot of that stuff that goes on that is, when you really want to think that you can break this thing down, there are so many factors at play.
There's no doubt about it. There's so many variables that go into which teams are going to advance and which teams aren't. And a lot of it, let's be honest, comes down to luck, really. Yep. One possession, two possession games, bad refereeing. We see it all the time in the NCAA. And I do like those more experienced teams because they might be able to overcome it. I think what players need to have in their minds is that NBA teams value winning. And I really think that the further you're able to advance, just the better you're going to look. I mean, putting up 20 shots and scoring 18 points, it's not going to impress anyone. And, these teams are not, they see through that selfishness and just putting up, hollow stat lines. I mean, they go to the D League and they see that there. So that's not what they're looking for when they go to the NCAA tournament. They want to see guys playing defense. They want to see them being unselfish and they want to see them advancing in the tournament.
Jonathan, you look at the 1-2 seeds in the bracket. And so if we're going to project teams down to regional finals, potential Villanova, Duke is a 1-2, Gonzaga, Arizona is a 1-2. Kansas and Louisville and then North Carolina, Kentucky, some different kinds of programs. Villanova is so interesting to me because they won a national championship last year without a first round pick on their team. The overall number one seed this year, possibly without a first round pick. Josh Hart, I get the sense, a second round pick probably. Somebody could always jump up at 28 to 30. You never know, but certainly no lottery pick. I mean, you could make the case the best pro prospect on Villanova is Jay Wright, their coach, because he has turned down NBA jobs in years past. And then even last year, he had some opportunities last summer. And I think they're going to keep coming for him. And there'll be a point here where I think Jay's really going to probably think about whether he's ready to make that jump, especially as this run ends. But for all the one-and-dones out there, nobody would argue that Kentucky, Duke are loaded with pro prospects, but they didn't beat Villanova last year. And, you know, right now, Duke might be the Vegas favorite, but Nova has built a team of four-year players, of upperclassmen, of guys who play within their role. And it's an interesting study in this age of one and done of how to go about building, you know, a national championship contender program instead of just, you know, going out and getting seven of the top 15 players and you know, ready-made lottery picks.
You know, I have college coaches call me all the time asking about, you know, different players that we've seen in USA basketball settings, international players that we come across in, you know, in our travels around. And, you know, you'll find, you know, an interesting 18, 19-year-old prospect and you'll offer it to, you know, you say, hey, any interest in taking a look at this guy? And what I've gotten more and more from college coaches the last year or two is, you know, we're not really looking for teenagers. We're looking for, do you know any 23 or 24-year-olds? You know, I mean, that's, we're looking for transfers. We're looking for fifth-year guys. We're looking for, you know, JUCOs. We're looking for guys that were held back 1 or 2 years. I mean, they want men. They're not looking for kids. And you look at Villanova, and, you know, not a single player drafted, and they win the NCAA championship. I mean, that tells you what, because they have guys that come in and, you know, get bigger and stronger and they get more experience and they learn how to play and they, you know, they fit into their culture, and Jay Wright is a phenomenal coach, and that's how they win. You know, I mean, I think that they, there's only one Cal Perry who can go get a Michael Kidd-Gilchrist and an Anthony Davis and turn that into a national championship. And that doesn't happen very often. It's a lot easier to go out and recruit older guys, you know, just who are bigger and stronger than the other teenagers and win that way.
Yeah, and you know, Duke is the only other team. Yeah, they're one of the other teams really sort of in that big-time one-and-done market. They've gone head-to-head with Kentucky. You look at the brackets this year, and Kentucky and Duke are both two seeds, but I think pound-for-pound, the most potential NBA talent on those teams, and the fact that Duke has gotten healthy and they played better here the back end of the season, obviously won the ACC tournament. While they weren't a one seed, I think, you know, you see Vegas has them at number one right now, or is the most likely team to win it all. And, you know, they potentially have a conference or a regional final in New York, which is like, you know, they call Cameron Indoor Stadium North. There's so many alums. Now, Villanova has a strong presence here, but Duke, like, you go through history and all the great wins they've had in the Meadowlands, you know, and then certainly at the Garden, they're very comfortable playing up here. But the one player from Duke who certainly separated himself among their young players, Jason Tatum, who had an up-and-down freshman year, a forward who sort of had to learn the college game, and you know, I'm sure Krzyzewski being in and out this season, it may have impacted all of them, but him certainly. But now Tatum has put himself in a year where everybody was focused on the point guards at number one overall, Markelle Fultz from Washington, Lonzo Ball from UCLA. Tatum has to be in that conversation now, right?
Absolutely. I mean, just the way that he played in the ACC tournament, I mean, he looked like a legitimate superstar throughout that entire run. I mean, and you have to give credit to their coaching staff, too. I mean, they're putting him in position to take advantage of his skill set, you know, clearing out the floor and, you know, letting him go one-on-one. There's not every coach would let their, you know, 18-year-old freshman play that way, but I think they've learned how to trust him a little bit more, and I think that he's kind of come their way, too. I mean, early on in the season, he was looking for his own shot quite a bit. He didn't really, I don't know if he really appreciated what he had next to him in Luke Kennard and Grayson Allen and Emile Jefferson. And I think as the season has moved on, he's figured out that those guys can help him, and they make him better. I mean, Luke Kennard is, you know, one of the best players in college basketball. And I think that, and also on the defensive end, I think Tatum is, I mean, nobody's ever asked this guy to play defense in his life. And so he gets to Duke And all of a sudden, you know, all of these concepts of, you know, what am I doing in the pick and roll and, you know, off the ball things and, I mean, different concepts that they're throwing at him. It was just all foreign to him. So it took a while for him to really get his feet wet and really know how to play. But he's been looking great. And, I think that Duke is well positioned to make a deep run. I mean, but, you know, there's a chance that they could run into, you know, SMU, Baylor. Those are tough matchups for Duke. So that will be very interesting to see, you know, here in New York if, either of those teams are able to advance to the Sweet 16.
This is the Vertical Podcast with Woj.
Jonathan, give me a minute to tell my listeners about ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites. And now you can. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 200-plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll in to ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by Fortune 100 companies and thousands of small and medium-sized businesses. And right now, my listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/Woj, W-O-J. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Woj. One more time, try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/Woj.
You look down Duke's roster and, you know, they've looked for consistent point guard play. And Frank Jackson, you know, is a freshman from Utah who they was, you know, a highly recruited player who, you know, people thought could be a one and done potentially, might still be. It took him a while this year to sort of get his footing, played better in the ACC tournament. I think he's a player that NBA executives are having to look more closely at because they may have to make a decision on him. Those are interesting players to me coming into the tournament who might be trying to fight themselves from maybe 30 to 40 in the draft to, can I get into the back end of the first round or into the first round? Does he fall into that group among guys you look at who are playing in March now?
He does. I mean, I think this draft is really wide open, not just at the top, but especially once you get outside of the top 10 or 11 prospects, it really starts to open up. And you talk to different NBA teams and they all have it very differently at this stage. And a lot of it is going to come down to who decides to enter the draft and, you know, what the different team needs are. I mean, there are a lot of, you know, point guards at the top, but then it kind of gets shallow after that. And there's a lot of big men in that 10 through 40 range. And it'd be really interesting to see how they kind of separate themselves because a lot of them are very young and the NBA, it doesn't really seem to put as much of a premium on these big guys as they did, you know, 10, 15 years ago. So, Frank Jackson is a guy that people are going to be watching closely, but I think that, you know, one of the risks of going to Duke is that you're seeing so much early on in the year that people do kind of, you know, they make the evaluation and then they move on to other guys. And I think talking to people at the Barclays Center, the different, you know, GMs, I think a lot of people have kind of written him off as like, he's more of a 2018, 2019 guy. He's going to have to really learn how to play, figure out how to be a point guard because he's definitely not, you know, what you're looking for at this point in terms of being, you know, this playmaker who can find guys and make other people better. That's really not him at this stage.
You know, it'll be interesting to see how educated players are in the process who have, you know, guys hear first round and they think, first round, I'm an NBA player next year. But with a new collective bargaining agreement, there are these two-way contracts that teams, you know, essentially you're going to be paid a prorated salary when you're in the NBA and paid a different, higher than a D-League salary, a traditional D-League salary, but a lower salary when they put you down with their affiliate. And as you know, Jonathan, like, there are lots of lottery picks who are spending a good deal of time in the D-League. Now, it's interesting, you know, for a player to go, do I want to spend at the highest level of college basketball? It's charter flights. It's, you know, five-star hotels. It's great facilities and medical staff and television and packed arenas. But most guys who are going to turn pro early are going to be in the D-League connecting from you know, 5 a.m. flight on Southwest connecting through Chicago to get to Iowa or to wherever, whatever
Sioux
outpost,
Falls.
Sioux Falls, you know, and there's, I hear it all the time from players, and you talk to D-League coaches, and, you know, how many players just sort of moping through the D-League going, why did I leave? Man, I had it pretty good. I had it pretty good where I was, and this isn't the life that I imagined. And that's, but that's the reality for a lot of guys, especially in a draft like this that's so stocked. Those guys in the back end of the lottery, and the NBA benches are going to expand. The rosters are going to expand. And so everybody thinks they're a lottery pick. Everybody thinks they're going to be good enough to be on a roster next year. But it's a rude awakening for a lot of guys, and I don't know that they all foresee that it's going to play out that way.
Yeah, I get parents reaching out to me all the time, high school coaches, AAU coaches, college coaches, brothers, sisters, cousins, pastors, financial advisors. Everybody's, you know, they're looking for someone to tell them to go pro, you know. I mean, what can you give me? What kind of feedback can you give me? And I always tell them the same thing. Go to a D-League game. Make sure you're familiar with what that looks like, because that's where you're going to spend most of your time. If you do go to, if you do go to the NBA, if you're not a top 10 pick, that is where you're going to find yourself next year. And make sure that you're comfortable with those empty arenas, with those, you know, with the style of play there. I love the D-League. For me, I enjoy going to those games here, you know, Westchester and Brooklyn, and I'll watch those games on TV too. But it's a, like you said, it's a different atmosphere, and it's a different lifestyle, and the guys in college do have it very nice right now. So I would, unless you are a surefire top 20 pick, I would definitely err on the side of caution. But, you know, to the NCAA's credit, they've made it easier now for guys to test the waters and to, you know, to get feedback from NBA teams. To, you know, they're letting guys go through the workout process now. They're allowed to go to the NBA Combine. The NBA has the undergraduate advisory committee, which I was talking to people from the league office this past weekend. They think the floodgates are really, really opening this upcoming spring, that they're going to be, you know, potentially, you know, hundreds of players entering this NBA draft. So I think it's a positive thing that these guys are able to get feedback, but I would be very careful. I mean, there are a lot of players who tested the waters last year and, you know, played very poorly at the combine, were forced to go back to school, and their draft stock just hasn't recovered since. You know, I mean, once you get labeled as a guy who is not an NBA player by teams, it's hard to change their minds. You know, I mean, unless you completely transform your game like like Justin Jackson at North Carolina did, or Caleb Swanigan at Purdue, most of those guys who ended up going back to school have not really significantly improved their draft stock. So I think that it's a dicey situation, you know. I mean, kind of exposing yourself to, you know, this test in the waters. I know NBA teams love it because they get, you know, so much more info on guys. They're able to bring them in for workouts. They're able to get accurate measurements. And they put them through their psychological testing, and they get, you know, medical insight and everything. It's amazing for them, but it sometimes backfires on the players.
The top end of the draft, Jonathan, the three elite point guards people talked about all year long, Markelle Fultz from Washington, Dennis Smith from NC State, and Lonzo Ball from UCLA. I think Smith is a distant third in that group now. And it's funny, someone said to me before the season that the combination of Dennis Smith, who was kind of seen a little bit as maybe a little bit of an unfocused, at times a low-energy guy, meeting the NC State program, which, you know, is not under Mark Gottfried, was not confused with, you know, John Wooden and UCLA. It's like, it's a little haphazard. That somebody in the league said to me before the year, Dennis Smith would be better off just hiring a personal trainer, working out all year, because that's not going to go well there. And there's almost, you looked at the marriage of player and program and said, there's very little chance he's going to improve himself. He's probably going to slide. It's exactly what happened to him.
Well, it worked out poorly for him, and it also worked out poorly for NC State because Mark Gottfried was fired and he's, you know, looking for a job now. So, I think players don't always do the best job of investigating their situation. We see a lot of guys that were in the, you know, the McDonald's All-American game last year that are sitting at the end of people's benches, not playing. I mean, you know, Omer Yurtseven, another guy at NC State who people really thought that he had a chance to be a first round pick this year, but, you know, had a lengthy suspension to start the year and then came in, you know, playing out of position at the power forward spot and really struggled defensively, never got his footing in college basketball. Unquestionably needs to go back to school and really hope that they get a home run hire, a coach that can teach him how to play defense and can really get more out of him. But, you know, it happens that at better programs too. I mean, Marquise Bolden is another guy at Duke who, you know, we played 30 seconds, I think, in the ACC tournament and, you know, picked up a couple of fouls and that was it for him. I mean, you have to, there's so many programs looking for players. I think sometimes these guys need to kind of broaden their horizons a little bit. Instead of just waiting to see who recruits them, maybe kind of look at where could I really fit? I mean, where, what are some schools that I could really excel at and maybe talk, go and, you know, pursue those options instead.
This is the Vertical Podcast with Woj.
Jonathan, we'll get back to our conversation in a minute. I've got to tell my listeners about Blue Apron and how they can get three free meals by just using my name, Woj. Guys, not all ingredients are created equal. Fresh, high-quality ingredients make a real difference. So it's important to know where your food comes from, and we all know there's nothing better than a great home-cooked meal, and no one makes it easier for you to do that than Blue Apron. Their mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. Blue Apron knows that when you cook with incredible ingredients, you make incredible meals. So they set the highest quality standards for their suppliers and only bring you the best ingredients and all of it right to your door. Plus, each meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card and pre-portioned ingredients and can be prepared in 40 minutes or less. Now listen closely, because this is the part about the three free meals I was just telling you about. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free, along with free shipping, by going to blueapron.com/Woj, W-O-J. Think about that. That's three meals free just by typing in my name. Once again, that's blueapron.com/Woj, W-O-J. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Now let's get back to our guest, Jonathan Givony. Lonzo Ball, we were talking about the point guard, Jonathan. Lonzo Ball at UCLA, he's got this big canvas, this big stage here in March on a really, really good UCLA team that, many think could be a Final Four team, maybe a national championship contender. You know, when I watch him, like everybody else, you do see Jason Kidd. And not just in the passing, not just in his court awareness, but, you know, the thing about Kidd and in college and then when Kidd was at his best at the NBA was he impacted the game in so many ways. And you see the little things with Lonzo Ball, whether it's just a really smart defensive play, keeping a ball alive, you know, blocking shots. I mean, he is maybe even a little more athletic and bouncy than Kidd was. And Kidd was, you know, spectacular. But I would think that a good march by him is going to, he's electric and you see how he's transformed. He's done what Fultz and Smith couldn't do, and that was win, transform a program. And it just feels like if he can have a very good March run, if they're in the Final Eight or the Final Four, the momentum of that could carry him right through to the draft. And, you know, whether it's an owner, a GM, they say, hey, we're not going to get criticized for taking Lonzo Ball. Even if he doesn't work out, people will look back and say, well, that was the right guy to take. It just feels like he's got an opportunity here to separate himself maybe from almost everyone else.
I agree. Taking UCLA to the Final Four could absolutely solidify him. It will strengthen his case as the number one pick in the draft. I don't think anything is going to be decided, you know, on April 1. But the downside for him, even if they lose in the first round, I think he's going to be a top four pick. Right. But if he wants to surpass Markelle Fultz, I mean, on more NBA teams' boards, because I do think he is number one on a couple of teams' boards right now, then taking UCLA to the Final Four would help him quite a bit.
How much, you know, organizations will always say, front offices and teams, listen, the tournament is just a small part of the bigger picture, the bigger file, and
that we've built on a player over time, whether it's his time in college, the time we've seen him play at USA Basketball or their camps or in international tournaments, or we watched him a week of practice at the McDonald's All-American game, whatever the body of work, that we aren't going to overreact to March. But some still do, right? I mean, some still overreact to a couple weeks of hype and great play. You know, we've seen, you know, I hate to say it, you go through some of the players who've done that. You know, Jimmer Fredette had a great March for BYU, and Stauskas went to the Final Four his freshman year and then got drafted his sophomore year out of Michigan, same team reacting, the Sacramento Kings. Do you still think those are the outliers, or do you see more teams being reactive, even if it's their owners? Here's the other thing too, right, Jonathan? The teams who are picking at the top of the draft often, I mean, they're there because they were really bad. And sometimes it's the same teams over and over. Usually that gets back to ownership. It usually gets back to the bad owners find themselves in that lottery more often. And sometimes they're the ones who are easily, they're impressionable. It's the last thing they see, or it's something they think might be popular. Like the Spurs, the Jazz, the Celtics, they're not going to pick any player based on what they think the perception is. They're going to pick who they think. They don't care what anybody thinks. That's why they're good organizations. But how have you seen that play out? Do you see more and more at all that teams can be influenced by this, just this short window of time?
I think the biggest problem with the draft process is that it happens way too long after the season ends. And because of that, a lot of teams get comfortable, I think, in the notion that they only need to start scouting once the trade deadline is over, you know, in late February. And that can really leave you susceptible to getting fooled by players who, you know, only have who kind of started off late. And you really need to see that progression from November, December, January, into conference play, into the conference tournaments. So it's obviously not every NBA team. I think there's a split. You know, some teams will tell you that, you know, the NCAA tournament means nothing to them. You know, these GMs will be getting on planes here and heading to Europe and really just skipping this whole experience altogether because they don't want to get caught up in all of the hoopla. They'd rather be sleeping when everybody's going crazy about one guy or another on Twitter, you know. So it's, you know, there's different philosophies about it. I do think that March does carry some value because these guys have some experience under their belt now. You know, you look at a Jason Tatum, and he's played 30 games now. He's not the same guy in March that he was in November. So I think that these games should carry a little bit more weight because the level of competition is stronger and the stakes are higher. And, you know, whether a guy can step up in, you know, under these bright, when their lights are at their brightest, means something for sure. But should you put everything into, you know, that basket, all your eggs into that? I don't think that's wise. So, I mean, we start watching guys as early as when they're 15 years old, when USA Basketball brings them to their, you know, development camp in October. And that's when we really start to get our first look at, you know, Harry Giles, Jason Tatum. I mean, that's when we start to build the file. But unfortunately, NBA teams aren't allowed to go to all these events. They're not allowed to watch them play in high school. They're not allowed to go to AAU events. And so I do think that kind of narrows their focus a little bit. And if GMs were allowed to send their scouts out a little bit more, I know that the scouts would go to watch some of these same events, but they're not really allowing them to do that. And I do think that causes teams to make mistakes.
This is the Vertical Podcast with Woj.
Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans proudly supports the Vertical Podcast with Woj. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, it's important to work with someone you can trust who has your best interests in mind. And with Rocket Mortgage, you'll get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence to make an informed decision. Don't waste time searching through stacks of paperwork. With Rocket Mortgage, you can securely share your financial info to get a mortgage approval in minutes. You can even adjust the rate and length of your loan in real time to make sure you get the mortgage solution that's right for you. Whether you're looking to buy a home or refinance your existing mortgage, you can lift the burden of getting a home loan with Rocket Mortgage. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/woj. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030. Jonathan, you mentioned executives going over to Europe in this time frame during the NCAA tournament. And you know, I've talked to a few executives who are on their way back now, just got back, but are also some others who are headed over to Europe. And that one player everybody's talking about, he is not in this 17 draft class, but he'll be in the 2018 class, Luka Doncic. He's a Slovenian 6'8" guard forward, plays for Real Madrid, just turned 18 years old, has been dominant playing with men in the Spanish ACB League and the Euro League. It is rare to see a player that age. There are players that age on rosters who don't contribute, but who may be high picks. Kristaps Porzingis was not dominant in that league and was really, really good as a rookie. What kind of comparisons do you make to Doncic, and are you as excited about him as it feels like NBA teams and executives are to try to get themselves in position to draft him?
I'm just as excited. I mean, I'm a big believer in productivity, level of competition, and doing it on the biggest stages and winning. And this guy, I mean, he's what he's doing in the EuroLeague as a 17-year-old, now just turned 18, I mean, is unprecedented. We've just never seen it happen from a guy that age. So in terms of comps, I mean, it's hard to – I mean, you hear – people compare him to Manu a little bit. He's taller than Manu. He's much stronger. Manu was nowhere near the player that Doncic is right at that same age. I mean, Manu was a late bloomer. It took him a while. I mean, there was a reason why he was a late, late second-round draft pick.
We had Ettore Messina, who coached him in the EuroLeague. He was on a podcast last month, and he coached him before he came to San Antonio. And I asked him about that, and he said – he thought Manu could be a good player in the NBA, but he never imagined he was sending a future Hall of Famer off. He just, and the Spurs didn't either. But Luka, it is different with Luka. People see franchise player with him.
They do. I've heard some people compare him to like a 6'8 version of Lonzo Ball. That's what you hear. Not the most incredibly explosive guy in the world, but just has a higher basketball IQ than anybody else on the floor, sees plays developing before they do, can shoot the ball, can rebound it, can pass it, can play any of the three backcourt positions Doncic can, you know, averaging almost a triple-double on a per-40 basis in the EuroLeague. And, I mean, has just, you know, has really had a sense for knowing when to take over late in games and big games for them, you know, the fourth quarter, which is amazing for a guy who's 17 years old playing at that stage with that pressure. I mean, it's almost a joke to compare him to other guys in a 2018 class who are, you know, they're playing against high school guys. I mean, it's just, it's the level of competition is so different that it's going to be interesting to see what kind of year he can have next year, because he's already so good. There's going to be, you know, this anticipation that he's going to be able to take his game to another level, which is going to be challenging to do considering how good he is already.
In your mind, you've seen the class of 2018. You've already started to see these guys at different events. Can you imagine a scenario he's not the number one pick, or does history tell you things do change, they can change, and somebody who maybe you're not even thinking about now can still emerge in that group or see that good?
Well, it's going to be interesting because he's not your prototypical athlete that goes number one in the draft. I mean, I can't think about a guy, you know, who didn't have that unbelievable explosiveness or quickness or whatever who really got consideration. I mean, but there also hasn't been a guy who has been so productive at such a young age at the same time. So I do think that the jury is still out on that 2018 class. I think Michael Porter is going to have a lot to say about that. I think
he signed with Washington.
With Washington, yeah. I think DeAndre Ayton, who's headed to Arizona, you know, he's got all the tools to be a number one pick. Mohamed Bamba, who, you know, probably is headed to Kentucky. He's another guy that's going to be in consideration. He's kind of a Rudy Gobert type of player with like almost like an 8-foot wingspan. I mean, he's a freak defensively. So I think Doncic is in the lead right now, but it's going to be interesting to see kind of how, what kind of, you know, 2018 season he can have. And by the way, Real Madrid is going to do everything in their power to keep him for maybe another year. I've heard some talk that, you know, maybe 2019 is going to be his draft class and not 2018. They might, you know, give him just this huge bump in salary. And, you know, maybe he feels like another year in Europe could be beneficial for him. I mean, he's in, I mean, there are not many better situations than playing for Real Madrid. We've seen Sergio Llull, his teammate, who was drafted by the Houston Rockets, who is clearly an NBA player, turned down the Houston Rockets year after year just because he likes the situation in Real Madrid. So I don't think it's a home run that he's going to jump on the first opportunity he can to get out of there because, you know, Real Madrid is probably a nicer place to play than a lot of NBA teams. You know, you talk about some of the worst teams in the league. He's going to have to be careful about where he heads to. I mean, there are some bad teams that'll be drafting at the top of that draft, and that's he might not want to go there.
Jonathan, we could go all day, man. I appreciate it. I'm sure we'll be studying your upset candidates here this weekend pretty closely. We will hold you to them if they do any damage to our brackets, but we'll talk to you soon, man.
Thanks, Woj.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Vertical Podcast with Woj. A big thank you to our guest today, The Verticals and Draft Express's Jonathan Givony. Remember to subscribe and listen to new and archived episodes of this podcast and The Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix wherever you get your podcast. You can find us on thevertical.com, Google, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, iTunes, and you can hear the Vertical Podcast Network every weekday at 3 p.m. Eastern on Sirius XM Satellite Radio, on Sirius Channel 214, XM Channel 203, and on the Sirius XM app on Channel 967. I'd also like to take a moment to thank today's sponsors, ZipRecruiter and Blue Apron. Be sure to support them the way they support us here at the Vertical Podcast. We'll catch you next time.